and welcome to the latest episode of Who Do You Think You Are? The podcast series by A3 Communications, the data storage industry PR agency. My name is Fred Monson, and I'm the founder and CEO at A3 Communications. In the guest chair today, we have someone many of you will be familiar with, Paul Speciale, currently CMO at Scality. Hello, Paul. How are you today?
Hi, Fred. I am wonderful, and it's super to be here with you.
Thank you. We've been working together for a few years now, and this is not the first time our professional lives crossed. I remember working together when you were at AmpliData, for example. And what has always been an attraction for me when we've worked together is the fact that your background is a blend of marketing and product management, which I think makes anyone in marketing a stronger professional. How long have you been in this line of work, and what came first, the marketing or the product side?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've always found it to be a good rooting for the job. I have now been kind of in a more pure product marketing and marketing role for about 10 years, but I've been in the tech industry, I'm afraid to say, for 30. And I really started purely in the tech side. I wanted to be a developer for many years. I liked doing coding. And then there was a time in my career where I met someone who said, you should go into technical sales. And at first it sounded daunting and I took it, but that started the progression into, you know, selling and then product marketing, then product management jobs. And eventually you end up realizing that the tie-in between the product knowledge and how to message it to the customer is just so tight. And that's what caused the transition for me. And so, like I said, it's been about 10 years doing the marketing side.
Okay. So I think that must have been when we started working together.
I think so. It was around the 2010 timeframe, which was really the time this technology, object storage for on-prem, kind of hit the market in some of these early adopters.
Yes, because of course, Scality has a big play in object storage. And that was also what you were promoting when we first started working together and you were at AmpliData. And it's interesting to see how that technology is still so hot and so interesting because it's been a while.
It has. And I should say that right before the object storage vendors, I was involved with some scale out NAS storage startups. But the problem is really the same, right? It's storing and protecting unstructured data. But this change in the paradigm, you know, really hit us at around the time that Amazon announced and started providing cloud services. And we all saw that we needed something bigger, you know, something that could go cloud scale. And you're absolutely right. It was kind of that time around 2010 that we saw a number of new entrants, including, you know, the current company that I'm with, Scality, and two or three others that started hitting the market. And now it's been this evolution over 10 years where we've, you know, first had to find a standard API for this technology. You might remember, Fred, that at the beginning, we didn't have Amazon S3. Standard, right? So we were seeking, something we could converge around, right? So now S3 is it. Then we needed applications to come online. And that's been happening, you know, more and more over the last 5 years, I would say, with more business applications speaking object storage. And now I think it's an accepted part of the data center. So anyway, I mean, back to the root of your question, which is understanding the tech, it really, really does help on the marketing side, all kinds of ways.
And it really helps us on the PR side, you know, as an agency, because it's so much easier to be briefed and to understand what we are trying to promote when we have someone who understands both the product and how PR and marketing work. That really makes a huge difference. So what advice would you give someone who is starting out in PR and marketing in IT, someone who wants to learn about brand development, reaching their customers, the company customers through communications? Do you have any tips, any recommendations?
I was thinking about this. I mean, my own evolution was kind of on these technical, you know, the technical foundations as we just talked about, right? And I think it's really helped. And let me make one more comment on that, and then I'll talk to you about the advice for somebody new. The other thing that I think really helped is this coding background, okay? I've always relied on the fact that I understand what the engineers and the developers are telling me, right? And some of that is, it's pretty complex stuff, right? Algorithms and data structures. And it does help to have a bit of a rooting in how that all works. You don't have to be an expert in it, but it helps you at least understand what they're talking about and some of the nuances and problems, right? So that technical basis really does help in this line of work, okay, just to be clear about that. But if you're not a person that's done the pure technology background, the coding or engineering work, then I think something that helps you be analytical is a very strong basis for starting out in PR and marketing and comms. You know, just the idea of having worked with numbers, right? Looking at data, you know, there are people that work in healthcare and they look at lists of patients or patient data and they've done, you know, surveys of how people react to medicine. That's a really good basis because you're looking at the data that we would look at in terms of, you know, marketing metrics, right? How many people visit your website? How many people have looked at your PR posting? And you understand then how to analyze that. And I think that is a foundational skill that can then help you understand, okay, now I understand how the customer is engaging. I understand what they're interested in. Now I understand how they want to see my brand. It's just a really nice progression from this, you know, understanding and feeling comfortable with numbers part of things. That's my advice.
And it's very sound advice too. So you talked about all these various elements that go into making, you know, someone a strong, solid marketing professional. But as a at Scality, for example, you've been very, very much involved with product on the product side and marketing.
Yeah.
How generally, not at Scality, but generally, how would a CMO, how would someone in your position get sales, engineering, and marketing to support each other? Because sometimes I have witnessed companies where marketing needs to run around and try and make things work because engineering or sales decided that something had to happen at a specific time, which may have clashed spectacularly with something else. So how do you get the three to work together so that they are supporting each other and not necessarily hindering each other?
Yeah, it's not an easy one, as you say, but I think as you're speaking, the common alignment point, it sounds obvious, right? But you have to put yourself in the customer's shoes. You have to, okay? Sales usually does do that, right? Sales will always say, I'm representing what I hear the customer telling us and what they need and what we need to bring them in terms of the product, okay? Product management, which was my previous role, right? Being the head of products and then CPO here, it's the same thing. You're trying to solve a customer problem. So put yourself in that mindset. Marketing is kind of in the middle, right? They have to be the glue a little bit between sales because we're enabling the sales team and working with engineering to make sure that we're explaining the product the right way because what they're building has to be represented accurately. But the core of it is you want to learn how to explain things in customer terminology. Okay. And I think that's ultimately what we use to align everybody. Okay. Internally, you can have disputes, you can have lively debates, you can have arguments, but you always rewind and say, stop, right? What does the customer want from us? They have to come first. And let's put all of our, you know, minor differences aside and make sure that we align on that. That's really the first principle. And honestly, if everything else fails, you stop and you say that again, and people will generally react positively.
So obviously this blend that you have has helped you. You know, you in a lot of companies, you've had a very pivotal role when it came to developing the brand and putting the company on the map. So this blend has certainly helped you build brands in a way that you maybe couldn't have if you were lacking the product side of things. Have you ever, without naming names, have you ever, or do you see it today, any companies in the, any vendors, any data storage vendors who maybe are not getting it right because they are not talking the right talk, maybe they're getting the messaging wrong? Does it still happen? Because it seems to me that PR is getting smarter and smarter. People are hiring agencies, heads of PR, there is so much literature out there, whether it's branded white papers, analyst reports, you name it, vendors are after it. But Do you think there are still vendors out there that you think, how did you get there? Because your marketing, your PR is not that sharp.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. And I have a few things to say on that. I think the hardest thing to do in this industry really is to make a simple message about technology. Okay, this is something that people miss early in their career. They think, well, the marketing words don't matter. Guess what? They matter completely. They are the tip of the iceberg in everything. And I would say that this has actually been one of the things that I've had to learn. It's challenging, especially when you come from technical roots. You think the best way to explain things is by explaining the tech, right? Let me start by telling you about the architecture and why we're better, right? There are audiences that want to hear that, of course, right? But the hard part is to simplify, right? The old adage is, can we say 5 words that the customer will understand and buy our product, right? That's a really hard thing to do. And I would say that to answer your question, I do see vendors that are out there with two problems. The message is too technical, okay? I've seen some real wild ones, right? Where it's more about what the product is internally than what the value is, right? And you have to flip that around, right? That's one. The other one is the marketing problem where it's about the vendor, not the customer, right? It's about, look how great we are. We do everything. We're the center of the universe. We do it all, right? And I see vendors even today in our space, and I'm not going to name names, but I see them doing that. And I think it's starting to hit, right? I hear from people in the industry that that's off-putting to the customer, right? Because the customer doesn't want to hear that. They want to hear, what are you going to do for me? And you have to do that by making your message as simple and as customer-friendly as you can.
I think you hit the nail on the head there. There are so many vendors who don't understand that it's not about them and it's not about the technology in the way. And for example, going back to object storage, a few companies have been acquired, which means nowadays you are competing with some fairly large vendors.
We are, yes.
They're much bigger, huge sales force, massive marketing budgets. And you could get an end user that looks at the 2, 3, 4 solutions and they think, but they're all object storage. Mm-hmm. They all do the same thing. How do you get them to understand why, in this case, Scality is different, how it can help them in a way that others cannot, when you're trying to, as you said, simplify the message? Where do you draw the line between, no, I've got to talk bits and bytes now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good point, right? Because we are in the land of giants to some extent, right? I mean, we all know the big 5 vendors, right? Dell EMC, NetApp, IBM, Hitachi, HPE, right? They're all out there. We're lucky to be aligned with one of them in our case, which is HPE. So that helps put us in a little bit more place of prominence rather than just being an independent small vendor. But to some extent, I think there's an advantage in it for us. And that is that all of those big companies are going to talk about many, many products. Okay. So the message kind of gets diluted when it comes down to talking about this particular solution, right? Think about the big vendors. They're going to sell a SAN and a NAS and JBODs and small, large, medium sized products. That means the marketing has to be kind of all over the map. You know, and I think obviously they can leverage that. They can talk about portfolio, but I think we can be sharper, right? So in for startups in general and companies of our size, I think that's the message. Focus, focus, focus. You can put your energy behind one thing that they can't. And the other thing I want to give the audience a tip on, you have one big advantage in being smaller, and that's you're agile, right? And the agility means you should take advantage of the ability to make decisions quicker, right? Don't spend forever. Don't burn that advantage, right? If it takes you 6 months to make a decision where it takes them the same amount of time, you're playing their game, okay? Try to make the decisions in weeks rather than months, and I think you'll have a real advantage. But, you know, when do we start talking tech? You still have to, right? So part of what we do is this high-level messaging and value prop. But in the end, people still want to read a white paper. There is an audience for that. People want to self-educate. And websites, to me now, are about that, right? They're about helping the buyer educate themselves so that at the very, you know, at the point where they're ready to talk to somebody to purchase the product, they kind of know what they're getting, right? They know 90% of it. Maybe they want a demo, but then they're truly ready to make the buying decision. Okay. So we're still going to have to do the work to explain the tech and how it's differentiated. There's no, you know, no reason to not do that. We have to do it.
And I think that another message there that smaller vendors can always focus on, which to be honest, I think is a very strong message, is also the best of breed versus single stack. Of course, yeah. The single stack gives you the peace of mind of one throat to choke in a way. Mm-hmm. But if you're really trying to get something built that will do exactly what you need it to do, how you need it to do, best of breed is still the way to go, right?
Yeah, yeah. Those are the words I was seeking, and you nailed it on the head. This is the way you differentiate. You say, we've really thought about your problem, right? And we purpose built this to solve that problem. And hence, you know, here's 1, 2, 3 different things that we do differently to make that true.
And how, when you talk to, say, analysts, you know, mm-hmm. we've got the big guys, we've got the Gartners of this world, we have the smaller firms. Do you find that do they champion the smaller vendors, or what's their take when you speak to them? Do you think that they are trying, they're waiting for you to become another HP, or do they think that absolutely the market needs smaller vendors?
No, I think the latter is true. They are very fair in terms of considering all of us, independent of size. You know, I mean, just to witness the Gartner big reports, right? The Magic Quadrant and the critical capabilities, we've done well, right? And we do well against the giant vendors that we named here before. So they absolutely give us the time, right? And to some extent, they actually make the playing field very fair by saying we're only going to consider one product from each vendor, right? I mean, it would be very hard for us to compete against the portfolio of Dell EMC because it spans a huge cross-section of things, right? But as soon as they isolate it down to their object store or their file system product, then I think you're fair. I mean, in terms of just talking to the analysts, I think my lesson learned is to not be down at the weeds. Don't be down in the technology all the time. You'll remember the days, Fred, where we were talking about data protection algorithms, right? Erasure coding versus RAID, right? And sure, there was a time where that was important to surface, because we had to protect the data and disk drives were getting bigger and there were limitations to how we did things in the old way. But I think you learn over time to explain it in a more top level way. What does all that mumbo jumbo mean for the customer, right? Does it mean some benefit? Does it mean they save money? Does it mean they save time? Does it mean they don't have to run around and change drives all the time? Learn to boil it up. And I think that works well, but there's one more thing to say, right? Marketing claims tend to be rather fluffy, right? And I'll pick on performance in storage. This is a really hot button, as you know, right? Claims are, you know, they span the range of things you could say. I find that vendors use numbers and then don't qualify them, okay? And we've always tried to be very accurate about that. When we put out a number, it's a real world number. It's something you can achieve, and we tell you how to get it, okay? We'll explain what's behind it. And I still see half the time where a vendor's claim on some bold number, you know, to an analyst, to a customer, to the press, isn't substantiated. And I think that's a big mistake. And analysts will see through that. I'll tell you that that's true.
They certainly will. So we talked about analysts. Let's look at a different audience. Let's look at the channel. Mm-hmm. Now, through messaging and positioning as a smaller independent vendor, how do you win over the channel? Because, you know, they may be given the opportunity to sell a much bigger competitor or to sell your product. As a marketing professional, how do you carve out the right messaging and positioning to attract channel partners?
Yeah, this is one that this is a hard one, and it's one that I've seen now for all these years. The channel partners, they have the ability to sell hundreds of products, right? It's very hard to spend for them to spend time on more than 10 of them, right? And usually you find out that 10 of them or so are the ones that drive the bulk of their revenue, their margin, and their livelihood, right? So I think the key is to really show them how this can be a repeatable sale for them. Okay. It can't be a one-off, right? I think getting $1 million deal or a $10 million deal is great for anybody, but if it's one, you're going to forget about it in a year. Okay. I think what you want to be able to show is that this is something the market needs kind of in mass, and it's something that they can do easily without a lot of high touch overhead. Okay. So that's the educational process, right? Show that there's a problem out there, that you can say something that gets the customer interested. Okay. And I'll give you an example. If you say to a customer or a channel partner, tell your customer they need erasure coding, they will laugh, right? There's no way that that'll catch anybody's attention. On the other hand, if you say, are you suffering ransomware problems? Chances are that's a hot enough topic and a common enough thing that it gets some attention. Okay. And if you have a compelling answer for that, and it turns out to be a repeatable process with significant, you know, not very significant overhead in terms of the sales process, that's what gets them interested. So I think my central theme here is show them how it's repeatable.
Okay. Now that leads me to another question linked to this one. So Scality, American company with a strong French heritage, huge presence in Europe.
Yeah.
Do you find that attracting channel partners, or generally attracting, you know, partners, customers through marketing, is different in the US versus Europe?
It is. And I would actually say, Fred, that the company is really French in its origins, and the R&D, you know, to a vast extent, is still based in Paris, France. So there's a really good home there. We're part of the French tech list. So the home audience understands that and appreciates it. I think there's no doubt about it. Actually, we started our channel building efforts earlier in Europe. So I'm talking EMEA, even Asia Pacific, ahead of starting it in the Americas. Okay. With the Americas, we were more focused on, you know, direct selling to the big customers, right? The giant service providers, the giant banks and insurance companies. It's been, you know, it's the usual investment of a couple of years to build a channel. There's no doubt about that. But I think what you do is you help them bootstrap the first few deals and educate them. We now have a training program so that they can become certified. We have a university program where customers can become educated and self-sufficient. That all sort of helps get them enabled to be self-supporting. And I would say that, you know, don't kid yourself and say it's a 3 to 6 month effort. It's a 2 year plus effort. And I think we're now down that path. And honestly, the reception now is strong. We have really solid partners in the EMEA territories, and we're following suit now in the Americas. So it's been, you know, it's been a doable process, but with that time barrier, you have to enable them, and you have to spend time. So the other part of it, of course, is hiring people that really understand the channel and can spend time with them. You can't do this at arm's length. You have to go visit them, right? This is one of the challenges of the pandemic for the last few years, is we had to do this all remotely. Now that we're back able to do things physically, it's great, right? I think the other thing that the channel partners love, by the way, is sponsorship, showing skin in the game, being with them on events, getting their customers interested. So we're doing that, right? I think last year we had a couple of hundred events, most of them with these channel partners, and that's really very effective.
Is that in both territories?
It was very heavy in Europe, secondarily in Asia Pac. And in Americas, what you see are more big events and trade shows. I'll give you a specific one. Veeam, who's a great partner of ours in the data protection backup space, they did about 50 or 60 smaller VMon events throughout Europe. They're called VMon Tour. We participated in them all, and we did a great job of attracting attention and leads. In the Americas, instead, they do one giant VMon big trade show conference. So there's a little bit of a difference in how the partners and the vendors see the market, but we're trying to exploit both. I really like the local field events. I think it gets you closer to the customer. You can engage with them more. And usually you also get a channel partner involved. So those are especially effective. I don't see the same pattern from partners in the Americas. They tend to be more singleton events, but you adapt, right? You still exploit it, and you can sort of drive general, you know, more roadshow type of patterns across all of those.
Absolutely. We've seen that over the past few years when, because we used to have a lot in Europe, we used to have a lot of events. And, you know, it's always the same cycle, a bit like technology. We had the big general events. Right. Then we had the storage events like SNW Europe, Storage Expo, and so on. Then they became general again. And now we are lacking storage specific events. So now everybody goes to VMworld, AWS reInvent, you know, the vendor events. There aren't really any independent ones, which means from a PR point of view, the days of going to a trade show, spending a couple of days, you know, cooped up in the press room doing briefings, are pretty much over. And in a way, that's one of the reasons why Technology Live, our event, has been doing so well, because we've given people an opportunity, again, to be in one room with lots of journalists, bloggers, consultants, analysts, and just brief them. And I think, I wonder whether that will happen again. We will end up with this type of events. But I think the boundaries within the data center are blurring.
Yeah, so they are.
Do we really need a massive show that's just about data storage? I may be wrong, but I would say I don't think so. Not today.
No, I kind of miss them in a personal way because they were great for meeting people and all of that. Honestly, the thing that I think is hard for us now is, you're right, you're either going to have to line up with a particular vendor, Amazon reInvent for cloud, right? Or, you know, some specific solution partner like Veeam, their Veeam On show. Honestly, the one that I think is really hard right now is finding a cloud industry show that's meaningful in a cross industry type of way. The closest one is KubeCon for Kubernetes. I'm not completely convinced that it's there yet in terms of being interesting for storage. In fact, I don't think it is yet. But let me give you a shout out. I think Tech Live is great, right? It concentrates, you know, a couple of dozen, sometimes, you know, 20 or so analysts and press in one room. And I think that gives us the audience that we're very interested in. They are the influencers that matter for us. So it's an event that we'll exploit to the extent we can.
Thank you. So what would you say is the one thing that you must do to be successful in technology communications, in PR? Is there one thing that you must really get right?
Yeah, and I think it goes back to ultra simple messaging, okay? And we've evolved a lot. I see this from a lot of our peers, right, that they iterate on messaging. It's a very fine balancing act, right? Because if you change your message every 6 months, you end up confusing people. You need to give something a chance to work, right? And giving something a chance to work, building brand isn't easy, right? It takes a lot of effort and it takes time for it to stick. You kind of want to think about something that is going to live for a couple of years, if it's possible, but try to refine on messaging, maybe do some testing, right? There's the usual A-B testing methodology where you test a couple of different things and see what gets better reaction. What do people click on? What do people open? You know, what do people respond to more? But trying to boil it up to something uber simple, right? I mean, for our own example is, we used to say, what are we? We're distributed file and object storage. It's a very technical explanation, right? And then we said, let's simplify more toward cloud storage for your data center. You can see the leap, right? That's already a simplification.
Absolutely, yes, yes, right? Absolutely, yes.
I think there's another step of simplification beyond that, right? I mean, ultimately, what do we sell? We sell storage software. Right. If you could capture it all in two words, you'd be a magician. It's a little hard to do. You know, there's something very simple that people will say, OK, I get it. I see what they do and I'm interested. And really at that level, what are you trying to do? You're just trying to get people interested. The ideal thing for a marketer, ask yourself this question every day. What can I do to get a prospective customer in front of my sales team? OK, that should drive your actions. That should be your priority. And that's our mantra. Everything we do, we always say, does it get us closer to a prospect in front of our sales team? And if you can argue that, it's worth doing.
And that's the whole point of PR, right? Because at the end of the day, PR for its own sake is absolutely pointless. You know, we could get a great article in a magazine that none of our clients' prospects read. It would be a waste of time, money, budget, paper. Well, when there was paper and all of that, because you PR needs to help move the needle. And I know it's difficult to measure, but it is still important that it's aligned with sales and that we're always aiming in the same direction. And that we check regularly, say every 6 months. When there's an SKO, I always say, if there's an SKO, tell your agency what came out of that. Because if the direction has shifted and you don't tell them, they will continue to bark the same tree.
Yeah. I think it works both ways too, Fred. You guys keep a pulse on the market. You know what's being read. You know the hot topics, what might be thought leadership. And that, I think, also helps us in terms of product strategy, messaging. So it's really valuable in both ways.
Thank you. So say you're sitting around the board table, the conference room table, and you are told that you have a new product or that needs promoting.
Yeah.
What's the first thing you do?
It's going to sound rote, but I flip a switch in my mind and say I'm the customer. Okay. And I'm going to ask myself, why does it matter? Okay. Why does it matter to me? And then I force myself to try to answer those questions. Why does it matter? Right. Is it going to change something materially or give me some material benefit? I don't immediately go down to the features of the product. Okay.
No.
I want to know the what, why, the what and the why before I know the how. Okay. The what is, what do I tell the customer? What does the customer see and why does it matter? And that's something that over the 10 years, I think I've learned personally, because the temptation is to start at the bottom. Oh, what is it? What's it coded in? What are the features?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Wrong questions to ask. Start at the top for why it matters. And I think things flow from there. Okay. So hopefully that doesn't sound too rote and obvious.
No. It doesn't. And it is so important, because this is something that we always ask our clients when they tell us about an upcoming press release. Always, so what? You know, the famous
so what?
So what? Okay. This, why? Because sometimes I have found vendors try to launch a solution to a problem that did not exist.
Yeah, that's very true. It does happen. Let me say one other thing that helps me. I force myself to write the frequently asked questions, the FAQ that goes to you, our PR team, and hopefully explains it from that so what perspective, right? And if I feel like I can read that and convince myself that it matters, I think it helps. So even putting myself in those shoes helps.
Absolutely. And we have quite a few startups among our listeners. Do you have any tips for maybe a company that doesn't have budget for a PR agency? They don't necessarily have an in-house communications team. They may have one person who's involved in product and needs to try and put the company on the map or introduce the company. I believe you've been there. What tips would you give a startup in data storage today?
Well, I think you would agree with me, Fred, that the golden thing you can have is a customer speaking on your behalf, right? Having a vendor extol their own virtues is one thing, but I think it's viewed skeptically. I think you want to spend time, and this you can do with your product team and on your own, get that one champion customer. And that champion is not somebody who's just using it, but they see the value sufficient to the point where they'll help you in speaking and promoting it, right? Speaking and promoting might mean an interview, it might mean a video, testimonial, it might mean some quotes, okay? That alone, and I can go back to my AmpliData days, and you'll remember this. We had one particular customer in Switzerland, which was the Jazz Festival of Montreux.
I remember that.
You remember that? And this was a data storage problem, right? Because they had recordings of all this old music and they wanted to preserve it and protect it and monetize it. The mileage we got out of that one reference customer was amazing. I mean, more than you even think, because it got us PR, it got us attention, and it got us credibility. What more can you ask out of one activity that you do?
I think you're absolutely right. You know, credibility is important, because you can you can have the best product in the world, but if people don't believe you, they're not going to spend money on it. They're going to go somewhere else that they know that it will probably work.
So. Yeah, if it works for somebody else, then it can work for me if I have a similar problem. You're absolutely right. That's what we're trying to prove.
Exactly. So what do you think may be the next big development in data storage over the next 12, 24 months, 5 years? What should we get excited about?
Well, I think there's so many possible things, right? We've always talked about, look, it's so obvious that data is getting bigger. I don't want to repeat the stats, right? We know that. The other dimension that's happening is data in many locations now. But ultimately, what does this do for people? It makes people tired. It gives them headaches, right? And in the IT world, you're asked to manage all that. So I think whatever we need to do is to provide more automation capabilities. And you know where I'm going. When I say automation, I'm starting to think about smarter systems, the ability to leverage more machine learning and artificial intelligence in management. And of course, that's been happening with what's called AI ops already. But I suspect there's something that we haven't yet identified that's going to happen, okay? That's going to help us make these systems more self-managing and more automated. There's just no way we're going to be able to manage 100 times more data or whatever it will be, or 1,000 times more data with the same staff, right? So we're going to need something that does things for us in an automated way. I suspect it's leveraging AI ML in a way we haven't yet thought about. I think that's number one. I'll give you a number two, which maybe not at quite the same level, but I think now that we're storing trillions of files and objects in all these different places, finding the data super hard, something more intelligent in terms of searchability, queryability of storage, right? It's the places where we've used databases before, not storage systems. Some blending of the two technologies is coming. Okay, those are my two things that I think are very prominent, and not the only one. It's always hard to isolate it down, but those are the two I think that are very relevant.
Absolutely. We'll need to talk again next year and see how your predictions panned out.
Yes, I know. Those are always fun and yet challenging to do, but I do like to look and see if they came out.
I think we all do.
Yeah.
Right. So this brings us to the end of this episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are? Thank you for joining us today, Paul. A reminder for our listeners that you can find the list of podcasts in this series at a3communicationspr.com. I'm Fred Monson. Thank you for listening, and see you in our next episode of A3 Communications, Who Do You Think You Are?